Welcome to the Sleazecast at Christmas. Yes, it's time again for our seasonal edition of the least listened to podcast on the web, in which we'll have a meditation on the true meaning of this time of year.
We interrupt this broadcast for an urgent news flash. Over to Susie Sleaze in Downing Street for some breaking news.
Hi, I'm Susie Sleaze, live from Downing Street, where an extraordinary situation is developing. As I speak to you, Santa Claus, the magnum revolver in each hand, is standing astride the chimney pot of number 10, in some kind of anti-globalization protest. Police and military snipers have surrounded number 10 and negotiators are attempting to talk him down. Oh my god. They've killed Santa. Santa is dead.
Wow, Santa is dead? What are we going to do? I mean, can we have Christmas without Santa? I mean, I know it's really meant to be about religion and the birth of Christ, but in truth, doesn't Santa really represent the true spirit of Christmas? With his ruddy cheeks that speak of years of alcohol abuse, and his extended stomach which speak of years of overeating, both of which are surely amongst the great traditions at this time of year. I mean, that's what we like to think Christmas is about, overeating, drinking too much. Ah, so surely we can carry on without Santa. I mean, you know, there's more to it. I mean, I know there's the presents. We're going to ask, how are the presents going to be delivered? But that won't stop us surely buying the presents and getting them. I don't know, I need to think on this more. I think the best thing is to do like I like to do at this time of year. Retreat to my friendly local bar and mull things over with the staff there.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, what are you late meat to eat? Archie the man just speaking, Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. What? There's a package from you arriving for me, and I shouldn't open it until Christmas. A present for me? Are you sure this is Duffy? Well, Duffy, I'm flabbergasted, you know? Well, gee, thanks. And by the way, did you receive my present yet? Well, it's probably in the mail. I'll call you back. Holy cat, Eddie. Duffy bought me a present. I gotta get something from him. I gotta get something. What could I... Let me see. Europa. I got it. What? I'll send him one of my portraits. Have you got a pen, Eddie?
Yeah.
Thanks. I'll autograph it, you know, with something nice. Let's see. To my dearest employer, good old Duffy, in fond appreciation for all I have done for you. Signed, Archie.
Say, Archie.
Yeah, Mr. Bailey.
Do you think that a picture is enough of a...
Listen, Bailey, he's the boss. Naturally, I can't send him as good a present as he's sending me. After all, with the kind of dough Duffy's got, you know, and an expensive present is no skin off his flint.
Say, Archie, wouldn't it be wonderful if around this time of year he sent you a lovely warm scarf?
A scarf? Well, Bailey, I'm funny that way. You know, I'd rather warm myself over a gold cigarette lighter.
Well, as long as it's something that keeps you warm. Don't forget, Archie, the cold sneezing is here.
Would you mind to repeat that, please?
I said the cold sneezing is here.
The cold sneezing is here. Bailey, that joke sneaks.
And, Eddie, how about you Christmasing up the joint a little bit? Here, hang up these wreaths.
Where'll I hang them?
Well, leave one dangle over each table.
That's a good idea. Then after each customer's finished eating, we can just lay the wreath right on his chest.
Eddie, don't be so fascistic.
Say, Archie.
Oh, yeah, Miss Duffy.
Where do you think is the best place for me to hang these mistletoes?
Well, how many you got there? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Miss Duffy, you're going to hang 7 mistletoes around this joint?
Well, what do you want me to do? Santa one twice all the time?
Well, you mean to tell me that you got all these traps set for Brackenbridge Hartson Felder?
Oh, him.
Oh, him? What's the trouble?
Oh, I just found out what he's getting me for Christmas. A $2 bottle of perfume. Isn't that cheap?
Well, now, wait a minute, Miss Duffy. You know, $2 a bottle for perfume might not be cheap. It all depends. Is it a quarter or a fifth?
Archie, everybody knows that perfume don't come in quarts or fifths. This is a pint. Gee, I thought maybe he would get me a fur coat or maybe an alligator bag.
An alligator bag? What would you do with it? You ain't got an alligator.
Oh, what's the use of standing here talking to you? Once a man, always a man.
And you can say that again. Eddie, did you ever... You ever beat the likes of these dames? They're all so mercenary, you know?
And, hey, this package just come for you.
Oh, yeah? Let me look. Hey, it's my present from Duffy. This package says, don't open till Christmas. But I want to teach you a lesson. Okay? So I'll open it. Now, here's a guy named Duffy. You know, he's mean, stingy, cheap, and yet... At Christmas time, he changes and gives me this
picture of himself.
Autographed to my dear employee, Archie. Where was I? Oh, yeah, you see? Maybe there ain't no real Santa Claus with no red coat chimneys, but I believe that...
As we all know, it's better to give than to receive. Because let's face it, there's nothing worse than being on the receiving end of an unwanted Christmas present and then having to go through all the hassle of having to take it back to the shop. Almost as much hassle as it is actually going out and buying the damn things in order to give them. Christmas shopping, isn't it the bane of all our lives? Trying to get the right things for people. Trying to get them on time. Then having to wrap them. God dear, what a palaver. And then on top of that, as they say, if it's something you don't like, you've then got a whole hassle of trying to take it back.
Somebody sent me a cuckoo clock.
A cuckoo clock?
Yes, but it's broken. The cuckoo comes out backwards.
Can't you exchange it?
Well, I took it back to the store, and what a time I had.
What happened?
Well, last Friday afternoon, I put the cuckoo clock under my arm and started over to Gimbledale's department store. Well, this is Gimbledale's. I wonder where the clock department is. I'll ask at this information booth. Pardon me, miss.
I'm sorry, sir. This gentleman was first.
Oh.
Now, what is it you want?
I want you to show me how to get out of this inferno of humanity.
Monty Woolley. Monty, what are you up to, lost in a department store?
I am doing my Christmas shopping.
But Christmas was last Thursday.
I have to do my shopping after Christmas.
Well, why?
To avoid those nauseating incidents that occur at this season of the year due to my alleged resemblance to that mythical busybody, Santa Claus.
You are involved in nauseating incidents?
With depressing regularity. Just a few minutes ago, a vile little cherub kicked me in the fibula.
Yeah.
He said, I told you I wanted a machine gun. What do you mean, bringing me that umbrella?
No kidding.
And last Christmas, while I was shopping, some little brat climbed up on my back and said, what are you going to bring me for Christmas, Santa?
Yes.
I said... Little boy, put your ear close to my mouth.
And when the little boy put his ear close to your mouth?
I bit him.
Monty, Monty, you bit the little boy.
Yes, and he tasted very sour. He must have had an acid condition.
But how are you today? How's your tongue? Is it smooth and red, or knobby and beige with an overcoat of a muddy hue? And how's the stomach? Is it firm and steady, or somewhat warm, or a little wobbly and a trifle windy? Or was your Christmas day so Spartan that today you're fighting fit with no twinge of remorse?
Thank you, 1940s BBC Doctor, for reminding us of the perils of overindulgence at Christmas. Oh, it's true, it is that time of year when we just throw caution to the winds, throw our diet plans out, and we just overindulge. Without a thought for all those poor people elsewhere in the world starving, what the hell, we don't care. We're just going to tuck into our turkey, our Christmas pudding, all those other things that are just so damned unhealthy and we wouldn't dream of eating at any other time of year. And on top of that, as we said before, there's the drink. Oh, the drink. You could float a battleship in the amount most families drink over the Christmas period in this country. Still, it all could be worse. Let's face it, it's far, far, far worse for the poor old turkey, isn't it?
But at Christmas time, Monty, everyone is supposed to be gay.
Gay? Fred, have you ever thought of Christmas from the viewpoint of a turkey?
Well, no.
At Christmas time, the turkey mortality rate is staggering.
But, Monty...
Fred, how would you like to be a turkey?
Well...
You're running around a barnyard in Maryland with your turkey wife and your little turkey children.
Yes.
Suddenly a cold hand is clamped over your wattle.
Over my wattle.
The next thing you know, your dark meat is being consumed by a total stranger in Linde.
But, Monty, Christmas...
Oh, Christmas, bah. The ridiculous gifts people send each other at Christmas.
What did you get, Monty?
A cellophane smoking jacket with asbestos sleeves.
Yes.
A dozen handkerchiefs with the word Gesundheit embroidered in the corner.
Yes.
The complete works of Ilka Chase with ladyfinger bookmarks.
What? Ladyfinger bookmarks?
Well, if you get hungry while you're reading, you could eat the bookmark.
Oh, I see. Well, where did you spend Christmas, Monty?
I always spend the holidays up at my home in Saratoga.
Saratoga, say, it must be wonderful.
Yes, Fred. I have a real old-fashioned Christmas.
A real old-fashioned Christmas.
Yes, Christmas morning, the minute I arise, I have three old-fashioned.
Fine.
And then I sit down and turn on my radio.
You tune in a Yule program?
The annual broadcast of Dickens' Christmas Carol.
And you listen?
I spend an entire hour hissing Lionel Barrymore.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles. There are clearly a number of ways in which a Christmas carol could be introduced. Myself, I am most struck by the happy fortune that enables us on this Christmas Eve to present Mr. Lionel Barrymore, the best-loved actor of our time, in the world's best-loved Christmas story, A Christmas Carol. It is the American way, as we know, to establish traditions quickly where popular instinct and sentiment pronounce them sound. And so it is that today, actually only the fifth anniversary of Mr. Lionel Barrymore's first playing of the part of Ebenezer Scrooge for the Campbell Playhouse, there is, I think, in all America, nothing more eagerly awaited, more firmly rooted in the hearts of the radio family that numbers millions, that this yearly performance of A Christmas Carol. A Christmas Carol, as Charles Dickens wrote it, has by common consent long been a classic. Mr. Lionel Barrymore's appearance in it is rapidly becoming one. And now, just before A Christmas Carol, Ernest Chappell has a special Christmas greeting from the makers of Campbell's Soups. Mr. Chappell.
Thank you, Orson Welles. As the old year draws toward its close, we of Campbell's feel a bond of warmth and gratitude toward each of you, our friends. For you see, in homes everywhere throughout the land, Campbell's Soups have been welcome. Day by day and week by week, you have placed confidence in us and in the foods we make. And there isn't anything we appreciate more deeply than the fact that so many of you have elected to let Campbell's make your soups for you. And so when Christmas comes, we look about to find some way to show our appreciation. Some Christmas present by which to say thank you. The gift we chose 5 Christmases ago and have chosen each year since has become a part of Christmas to many and many a family. It has become a Christmas custom to gather round the radio to hear and to enjoy a Christmas carol. And since it is Christmas Eve, we hope, too, that the younger members of the family are permitted to stay up and listen before dreams and visit of Santa. We get a great deal of pleasure planning and preparing this Christmas gift, and now it's ready. Off come the wrappings, off come the tags that say, please do not open till Christmas. Out comes the card, to you from Campbell's. And here is the gift itself.
And to think, we complain about the commercialisation of Christmas and the number of Christmas repeats on the television these days. I mean, really, all that blatant plucking for Campbell's soups? Not to mention the fact, this is the same radio programme, albeit in a new version each time, they've played every year for 5 years. And apparently, according to Monty Woolley, it was going on still in 1948. He was still hissing Lionel Barrymore then. Oh, dear, honestly. And why a Christmas carol? Okay, maybe it was different back then in the 30s, when this particular version was recorded. But really, I know it's a great piece of literature by Charles Dickens. It's a great story. One of the truly great Christmas stories. But for goodness sake, do we have to have it every bloody year? I wouldn't mind if it's just the one version. But no. No, there's so many different versions. You can't sit down on television pre-Christmas without having at least 3 or 4 of them on the same day. Really, only the other day I was looking at the schedules on Channel 4, first of all. Early in the morning, you can see an animated version of A Christmas Carol, followed by the Muppet Christmas Carol. And if you're quick, you could switch over to Channel 5 and catch, yes, the Alistair Sim, probably the best one, the Alistair Sim version of Scrooge. Same story all over again. And then if you did another quick switch to 5 USA, you could catch the Patrick Bloody Stewart version of A Christmas Carol. And then late night, if you on one of the other channels, I can't remember which one, it's bound to be on one of them, is Scrooged. Bill Murray, same thing again. I know it's a modern setting in the modern US, it's the same thing again. Really, how many times do we have to be told the same bloody story? Can we come up with a new Christmas fable? I think we all get it, you know. You should be nice to people at Christmas. And not be an old Scrooge. And not only that, does anyone actually ever watch it all the way through? I mean, we all know the highlights, don't we? You know, or the thing, God bless you all, bah humbug. What day is this? We know all that. Do we actually need another version? So here we are. I've decided to give you the condensed version of, well, the condensed Campbell's soup version of A Christmas Carol from 1938.
Marley was dead to begin with.
God save you, Uncle.
Ah, humbug.
I suppose you want the entire day tomorrow.
If it's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. Humbug. It's all humbug.
Ebenezer Scrooge?
Oh, no. What do you want with me?
I want much of you, Ebenezer.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Well, you're very particular for a ghost. All right. Who were you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Jacob Marley? But you're dead.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
You are the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold me?
I am that spirit.
Oh. What are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past. Do you know this place, Ebenezer Scrooge?
Know it? Know it? Why, this is the counting house where I was apprenticed.
Listen.
Who's your partner?
Why, it's my old master. Bless his heart, old Fezziwig. My master, alive again. Spirit, it's enough. Show me no more.
Come in, Ebenezer Scrooge, and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present.
Where have you brought me, Spirit?
To an humble dwelling in an humble street.
It's miserable enough.
Yet there is happiness there.
Who are these people? Who's that woman and the children?
These are the family of your clerk, Bob Cratchit. See his wife dressed in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, laying the table for their Christmas dinner. And there, assisting her, is her daughter, Belinda. And the young man with the fork in the stuffing, that's Master Peter Cratchit. And the two little Cratchits. Listen, Scrooge, and watch.
And I say God bless him too, Mother, and everyone.
You are the ghost of Christmas yet to come. You'll show me the shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Answer me, Spirit, ghost of the future. Oh, I fear you more than any specter I've seen. Yet, as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, lead on. Lead on!
Mother, please.
Oh, my son. My little son. Tell it to him. I loved him so.
What is that grave to which you point? Now I see. There's writing on that stone. The name on the gravestone is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Boy! Oh, boy!
Yes, sir?
What's today?
What's that, sir?
What day is it, my fine fella?
Why, it's Christmas Day!
Christmas Day! Ha ha! Then I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. All in one night. Heaven be praised.
How's that, sir?
Listen, my lad. Do you know where the poultry is in the next street?
I should say I do.
An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Tell me. Do you know if they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging in the window?
The one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Yes, my buck?
It's hanging there now, sir.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now go around, will you, and tell him to send it to Bob Cratchit and his family on Broad Street. And mind you, they're not to know who paid for it. Now, hurry along, my lad. And here. Here's half a crown for your trouble.
Yes, sir. And a Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas to you too, my boy.
I can't help but think we should feel ourselves lucky there. That didn't climax with Scrooge sending the boy off to the nearest grocer's to buy the biggest can of Campbell's soup he could find and send it round to the Cratchits. And mind you, don't tell them who sent it. And make out sure it's cream of mushroom. Yes, indeed. A Christmas carol all over again. You know, I really do think that perhaps one of the reasons why Christmas Carol remains a perennial favourite at Christmas is because of the amount of misery in it. Yes, misery. We love a few big dolts of misery at Christmas. It just reinforces how happy and lucky we are. Even if we aren't feeling very festive, we can look at someone else's plight and say, ah, at least we're doing better than them. Because just look at the way the media is filled. Every Christmas they find some miserable story to try and bring you down in the run-up to Christmas or in the aftermath of Christmas. If it isn't, usually they find some terrible natural disaster, a horrible murder. They love a good horrible Christmas murder, don't they? That sort of thing, definitely. Child neglect, that's always good at Christmas as far as the media are concerned. Oh yes, and a good war, why not? That's always good. But yes, and this year, of course, we've had the weather. It's raining so much, it's flooding places out, and people's travel plans for Christmas have been disrupted. Oh, yes, indeed. The media like nothing better than that. That idea they can tell you, hey, somebody else's Christmas is being ruined. Doesn't that make you feel so much better? Sat at home in your nice warm home about to tuck into your turkey. Oh, yes. So, let's just have a quick look at the news and see what Susie Sleaze has for us.
Hi, I'm Susie Sleaze with the latest seasonal stories. Police are being forced to mount armed guards outside department store Christmas grottos following a series of violent assaults on Father Christmases, which have left parents outraged and children traumatized. In the most serious incident so far, at the Totnes branch of Debenhams, a group of orphans from a local children's home visiting the grotto had the misfortune to witness Santa being seriously assaulted by a mob wearing Puritan hats and wielding flaming torches. They burst in with no warning, says one eyewitness. Children were thrown aside as they grabbed Santa and beat him to the ground. The kiddies were shrieking in terror as these lunatics stripped Father Christmas of his red suit and beard before giving him a bloody good kicking. The beard was then ritually burned. The red suit was later discovered nailed to the door of a local church. After the beard burning, the mob proceeded to tie Santa to a fake Christmas tree and attempted to burn him at the stake, using presents and tinsel trimming as kindling. It was terrifying. When Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer tried to intervene, they felt him with electric cattle prods, recalls an assistant who witnessed the attack. Apparently, the guy inside the Rudolph suit has still not regained any feeling in his testicles, and doctors reckon he might never have a normal erection again. Similar incidents have been reported up and down the country, and police fear that the attacks may become more widespread. Officers in London have already foiled an attempt by a group of axe-wielding maniacs dressed in Ku Klux Klan-style robes to chop down the giant Christmas tree in Trafalgar Square, revealed the police spokesperson. Whilst the police have so far made no arrests, it is widely suspected that the Puritan League of Public Decency is behind these attacks. The League, the militant offshoot of Mary Whitehouse's National Viewers and Listeners Association, has frequently spoken out against the secularization of Christmas, denouncing the figure of Father Christmas as being a cheerleader for the commercialization of the festival, and has long called for a more austere celebration of Christmas. The modern symbols of Christmas, the phallic tree, the Star of David, the fairy, the mistletoe, are the evil icons of paganism, debasing the true Christian nature of the festival. The League's leader recently told a newspaper, "As for this Father Christmas, he is a potent symbol of rampant sexual abandon and fecundity, resuscitated by the Coca-Cola Corporation, the evil empire of commercial secularism, in the 1920s, in an attempt to replace Jesus as the central figure of the Christmas celebration." Meanwhile, parents are being warned of the threat posed by road Santas. "One of these jokers could easily ruin a child's Christmas," Staines Trading Standards has cautioned. "Any kiddie visiting the makeshift grottos set up by these bastards is bound to be disappointed, fogged off with some crappy piece of shit from a pound store instead of a proper present and a grainy out-of-focus photo with Santa taken on a mobile phone." Whilst most rogue Santa set up their grottos in the most unfashionable corners of shopping centers and retail parks, fleeing at the first sign of security guards, at least one recently succeeded in infiltrating the department store, deceiving staff into believing that he had official status. He strolled in one morning with his elf and Rudolph the reindeer and set up his grotto under the main staircase and started charging £5 for each kiddie, recalls Mandy Crotchy Eller, assistant manager of the popular Bracknell department store. "We just assumed that he'd been sent down by head office." Problems soon began to emerge. One parent complained that his 7-year-old son was highly upset when he opened his gift, only to find that it contained an empty vodka bottle, whilst another claimed that her child had had a violent asthma attack after finding that her present contained an unspeakably soiled pair of underpants. In another incident, the grotto had to be closed all afternoon after Santa broke wine violently after a 3-hour lunchtime drinking session. That's all for now. More news soon.
But hey, it's still possible to have a good time and celebrate Christmas even in the midst of misery. Surely it is. I mean, Let's look at the lesson of World War II. They didn't stop celebrating Christmas then, did they?
That carol came from some of the men of the 8th Army, and it was sung from the borders of Tripolitania. We are here, we've just pulled off the coast road that goes along there towards Sirte and ultimately to Tripoli, and over by our recording truck have come one or two men of the 8th Army, and they're led by a corporal. I can see him there in his great coat and tin hat playing a clarinet, as you've just heard, and they've just been having a bit of a sing-song. And we've recorded this bit of it. As a matter of fact, they've been singing all kinds of songs with a bit of a difficulty in getting them to sing a carol at all, to be quite honest. And I don't want you to get the impression that the 8th Army is just having a nice picnic and is going gaily singing carols up the coast road after Rommel. They're not at all. They're far too busy fighting this war, and a grim enough business it is, and all this sand and dreary desert, and they've very little time for singing at all. We are a good way at the moment behind our forward troops, who certainly won't be going about caroling tonight. And Christmas, although it will be remembered and celebrated in the desert, won't, to be quite honest, be an affair of plum puddings and merry crackers and parties and good feasting for the men of the 8th Army.
1942. Those are the days when we were fighting, fought wars in the desert, and we knew what we were fighting for and who we were fighting. Oh, yes. Those are the days we had proper wars. Ones you could make films about with Richard Attenborough and Sir John Mills in. Indeed. But, I don't know. Maybe we do need Santa for Christmas. Maybe, you know, now poor old Santa's been gunned down at Downing Street after making his ill-advised anti-globalisation protest on top of number 10. I mean, and you can understand where he's coming from, really. I mean, poor old devil, he spent years delivering these presents, you know, these wonderful handmade presents made up there in the North Pole by his little elves. And nowadays, he finds them all out of fashion, swamped by mass-produced tat from China. But hey, that's the way things go, I'm afraid. We need to move on. We need to progress. We need a new Santa. And you know, despite his protestations, I think Monty Woolley could definitely be the man. And in fact, I think he's still over at Duffy's Tavern, where I think they're going to try and persuade him to take on the mantle of the great man himself.
Monty, you see, every Christmas Eve we have a big party here at Duffy's. You know, the joint is full of kids. They come down and get their fathers, you know. And we have a Christmas tree and wreaths around, and every kid gets a candied pig's foot. And I usually write a Christmas pageant.
You can write?
Like a whiz. Now, the only thing we yet ain't got set yet.
Well, now, what is it? What is it that you yet ain't got set yet?
Santa Claus.
Now, just a second, you Brooklyn Noel coward.
Now... Please, Monty, don't get excited. And, by the way, Brooklyn and Noel don't go with each other anymore. Look, playing the part of Santa Claus, it'd be so much fun. And look what a challenge it'd be for you as a pedestrian.
A challenge?
Well, sure. It'd be the toughest role of your career. You playing a sweet guy. And, when you give out them toys to them little kids, think of the thrill you'll get out of it.
Yes, yes. I can already feel the patter of tiny feet on my face.
Look, Martin. Wait, you was a kid once yourself, wasn't you?
There's no record of it.
Ah, wait. See, if you could just talk to one of them kids and see what it's like... wait a minute. Hey, Finnegan, is your kid brother Wilfred still here?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Wilfred, come here. I want you to meet Santa Claus.
Now, listen, you...
Look, Monty, what can you lose? Just kid the kid along a little.
Did you call me, Archie?
Yep, Wilfred. I got a great treat for you. Guess who this is? Wilfred, this is Santa Claus.
Well, well, well.
Not the Santa Claus.
That's right, young man. Ho, ho, ho. Well done. I'll be coming down your chimney Christmas Eve.
Well, thank you very much. But we have an oil burner. Say, Mr. Claus, I understand you live up at the North Pole.
I do? Oh, yes, I do.
You know, of course, that the average temperature of the North Pole is estimated at 70 to 90 degrees below zero Fahrenheit.
Well, it does get a bit nippy. But then one can always grab a snort of...
Sherry! Snort of... Sherry, of course, only drinks soft drinks, Wilfred.
That's right, Wilfred. Very soft. Cotton gin.
Yes, Wilfred, now see that you're a good boy, because on Christmas Eve, Santa Claus calls on every good little boy and girl.
How does he know where they live?
Well, he has all their numbers in his little red book.
Yeah, it's some mighty fine numbers, that little red book.
Oh, this is so ridiculous. Preposterous.
Huh? Wilfred, you don't mean that you believe in Santa Claus?
Oh, Archie, please. It's an amusing legend and rather pleasant, this Santa Claus. But this man plays him so badly.
Why, you...
Now, take it easy, honey. Honey, leave go of the kid's throat. Wilfred, put down them tweezers. So what, Marty? You know, the kid's a bit of a critic.
Please leave me get out of here.
Look, Marty, I'm sorry it turned out like this, but...
Archie, don't be silly. I'll be happy to be here Christmas Eve.
You will?
Yes, playing Santa Claus with Wilfred, with a bag slung over my shoulder. And do you know what I hope to have in that bag?
What?
Wilfred.
But old curmudgeon is Santa. Perfect for our times, an acid-tongued old queen like that. Absolutely. Ah, dear, if not Monty Woolley, perhaps Alan Carr. Could be perfect for the job. Ah, dear. But we're getting near the end now of this festive broadcast, this seasonal edition of the Sleazecast. And it's time for a Christmas carol, I think. And so here we present, performed by the Synthetic Voice Orchestra, featuring those favourite old synthetic voices like Biff, Frank, Mike, and let's not forget Microsoft Mary. Here we have their own version of We Three Kings.
We Three Kings of Leicester Square, selling ladies' underwear. It's fantastic, no elastic, not very safe to wear. Oh, star of wonder, star of light. The Roy Wickers caught a light. How fantastic, no elastic. Guide me to the traffic lights.
No, just kidding. That was, of course, the popular version we used to sing in the playground when I was a lad at school. But okay, coming up we'll have the real version from an old cylinder recording from over 100 years ago, so I think we can safely say everybody on it is long since dead and they can't claim copyright. Always an advantage when you're doing this sort of podcast. But before we hear it, just time to remind you, this was the Sleazecast. I was Doc Sleaz. If you like what you hear, you can get more of the same sort of stuff either at the Sleaze at www.thesleaze, that's one word, thesleaze.co.uk, or alternatively my blog through which these podcasts are distributed, Sleaze Diary, once again one word, sleazediary.blogspot.com. All materials contained within this are, as far as I'm aware, in the public domain. If you think otherwise and you feel you have a copyright on any of them, do let me know, and we'll try and sort something out. But it just remains for me to say, before we get sung out with We Three Kings, the proper version, just remains to really say for me to say, well, have a good one, whatever it is you celebrate this time of year, whether it's Christmas, whether it's some other seasonal festivity, whether, like me, it's Winterval, whichever it is you celebrate, have a good one, and we'll see you all again on the Sleazecast next year.
We Three Kings of Orient are, Bethlehem plain. Gold I bring to crown him again. King forever, ceasing never over us all to reign.
Oh, star of wonder, star of night, star with royal beauty bright, whence one leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light.
Christ in death to offer am I,
all men raising, worship him God most high.